Hi everyone, welcome to another episode. I thought this week I'd try something a bit different and do one of those introductions to the episode, just to let you know what's going on. So this week I actually talk about a difficult time that I had these past few weeks, and I actually wanted to talk about my state and the things that I'm struggling with and dealing with, and hopefully that they can maybe help you as well. So I talk a little bit about the struggles of dealing with powerful emotions and how I'm trying to better handle my emotional state by coming to terms with the emotions, recognizing them for what they are, and how that can hopefully help me overcome or at least manage them better in the future. So I hope you enjoy. This episode is a bit all over the place. But it was fun actually talking with chat and hearing some people as well, so I hope you enjoy it. As always, if you have any comments, you're more than welcome to share them with me, and thank you very much for listening to the episode. I hope you enjoy.
We have to talk about consciousness. Our life is actually a midpoint between the two deaths. Use the sexual energy in order to achieve enlightenment. The three-dimensional spiral shape encoded in our DNA, in our biology.
Hello, hello, one and all, and welcome to yet another episode from the Discomfort Zone podcast. Wow, back again this week, and good to be back, I have to say. But I'll be honest, it's been a bit of a rough week, and I want to actually talk about some things. As those of you who follow will know, last week we actually ended our Droomvalo series, Spirit Science, etc. Oh, thank you, PZ. I missed you all as well. I'm sorry I couldn't be here, and I'll get into actually more details of why and what this this week has entailed. Started last week, and anyway, a lot's been going on, but I'm here now at my levels. Let me turn that down just a little bit. I think that's better. But anyway, it's good to be back now. We have a lot to talk about. We have a good episode ahead. But before I go any further, I wanted to say if this is sort of a free episode and it's going to be a bit more, you know, open-ended. So if you have any questions, if you have any comments, anything you want to talk about, you want to hear about, then please feel free to post it in the comments. And I'll be checking through those as I usually do. But this week, I was thinking of either doing sort of something that'll go over the last series and sort of sum it up, even though that was a bit more of the last episode, or to talk a little bit about the next series and Gerald Clark. But following last week's absence, I decided to talk about the things that were happening to me in my life right now. Because I think that's also, it can be interesting, and it's not always that I have the opportunity to sort of, in between series, take some time off from the more narrative book-following format that we usually have here. Not always, but usually. These past couple of weeks, they've been very difficult for me, and they've been very, very emotional. And I just want to say that I heard that this week was a pink moon, which, I'll be honest, I've actually only heard about it from friends who sort of told me. So I don't know much about it. I haven't been into the astrological sides of it. But from what I understood, it did surface a lot of deep-seated childhood-related either experiences or, you know, traumas or things that are still with us today that we sort of need to deal with. And I have to admit, that did comfort me just a bit because I felt very much that way this week. Oh, great picture. Super pink moon. Right, right, super pink moon. Wow. That's a real photo. That's not Photoshop. That's someone next to oh my gosh, what's it called? Stonehenge. Wow, that's a beautiful picture. I might save that for later. Yeah, it's just, I'll be honest, what I've realized and what I'm realizing more and more is that the emotional side of things is sort of always a fog and a haze around like the real core issue. And it's not actually related to reality and to the present moment as much as it feels like it does. Like when I'm angry, for instance, or when I'm sad or depressed, I immediately attach it to something that's happening to me now. I'm sad because of this. I'm angry at this. This thing happened to me, and now it's made me feel this way. And actually, when I'm looking into it more and more honestly and openly after the fact and after my emotions have calmed, I usually find that the emotion was actually there before the what I call a triggering event, some kind of event that was the trigger for that emotion taking over. It was always there, sort of lurking under the surface before. And then I get this event which I can choose to attach to this emotion. And now my story, my narrative is that this is what caused me to feel this way. And this just happened a lot, and it caused tension with people who were close to me. And it's really sort of, it was a very tough week to go through that process of sort of uncontrollably hurting the people around me, and never because I want to hurt them, but always because I'm sort of trying to, you know, do the right thing, whatever that means, and getting into this cycle of ending up seeing my mistake, realizing that I was wrong in acting a certain way for whatever the reason is. And the thing that keeps coming up, and this obviously is nothing new, and we've talked about it a lot before as well, but I've sort of tried to sum it up, or at least choose a key factor for this, which is it really comes down to communication. And that's really the subject of what I wanted to talk about in this episode. I can see in chat, Abigail Handy. Oh, I, of course, didn't welcome. I didn't even, I've seen we've got a few people in chat. Oh my gosh, one of these names. 3IOHZZA, what, Biohazard. Ah, very nice, very nice. I'm getting better. Biohazard, welcome. PZ, Rondon, Trinkowski, I hope I'm not butchering that. And Abigail Honey, of course. Wonderful to see you here. Ah, nice, good. Well, I just caught you. Oh, and I can see you also sharing. I tried to look at that pink moon, and it just looked like a normal white full moon from here. I'll be honest, I didn't see it on the day that it was full, the night, but I did see it the night before. It was a very impressive full moon, but I it did look rather white to me. But maybe it was certain hours that it was pinker. I don't know. When I saw it, it was really high in the sky, and it was blinding white. Thank you for the pain. It made me raise my game. Oh, that's lovely. I yes, it's sad, but it's absolutely true. nice. Yes. So that's really the subject that I wanted to talk about in this episode, which is communication, because what I found was that ultimately there was a lack of communication for me within myself, leading to this sort of fantasy that my anger or my sadness is directly related to this external thing that happened to me, and that it's because of that that I, you know, am feeling this way right now. And then lack of communication between me and those around me, those who, instead of communicating, I end up hurting in one way or another, because I'm not able to express what I'm really feeling. And when I express it in a wrong way, it actually causes people, you know, not only to not understand, but to really share that same emotion with me. That's normally what happens. So because of this, I wanted to talk about some things which we have talked about before, but I thought we'd go a bit more in depth and have it relating specifically to communication. Because as those of you who know me for a while know that I'm very, very big on language and communication. And besides any sort of emotional growth and work that we can do, communication in general between people is very, very poor. I think we all agree that, especially it's been heightened today with this only text messaging or whatever. But even before that, just the use of language in its phonetic way leads to a huge lack in the ability to communicate properly, and even to sort of verify that communication and really understand that there is this difference in our language and the way that we choose to communicate. So, I thought that a good place to start would be to actually talk about the chakra system once again. And the reason for this is because I've been also feeling really connected to that metaphor, to that model, to explain and really understand within myself the workings and the mechanisms. Because obviously before I can express to anyone outside of myself what I'm feeling and why, I have to be able to understand it myself. And for that, I have to openly and honestly look at myself, look at my behavior and my experience, and really understand what's going on. And so the model that more and more lately, sort of, obviously for a long time I've been working with this model, but recently it's resurfaced in regards specifically to emotional development. So we've spoken about this before. I won't go over it too much in depth once again, but just to sort of refresh for those who are new listeners, the chakra system is a system of seven centers of energy, and each of these centers has a different sort of meaning and role. And we can think of them as a scale or musical notes. Now, each of these notes sounds different, but they all share this same existence of music, of being a note, and they can be sort of played together. And in fact, when it comes to the chakra system, there's no chakra that's completely shut off. Everything that we experience is some kind of myriad of or sort of a joint effort of all of the different centers, but each one expressed to a different degree. This is what's usually known as being a closed chakra, an open chakra. So, we'll go through the chakras very quickly, just to refresh, and we'll try and see it in a specific lens, a prism of viewing our emotional state and the way we feel to each of these energy centers, each of these chakras. So, the first chakra is called the root chakra, or the base. We're going to number them. We don't have to know the names of all of them. And this is really, in my understanding, emotionally, it relates to the reptilian brain. So we don't really call that emotions, we call those needs. But obviously, our emotions are very, very tied into our needs as well. When I have one of my needs that isn't met, if I'm hungry, if I'm tired, whatever it is, that will have a huge impact on my emotional state. So even though it's not an emotion, it relates very heavily to them, and everything else sort of rests on these. As your basic survival needs are not met, they become the most important thing. So all of those physical needs of eating, sleeping, everything that we know that reptilians have basically, is based around this first chakra. And the thing about the first chakra is that because it's this reptilian system, then it's also tied into the way that we sort of react to these things. And this was an understanding that I had, I'll be honest, I actually was listening to a podcast called Armchair Expert, which is a pretty famous podcast by Dax Shepard, who's an actor, among other things. And it's a very interesting podcast because he's a recovering alcoholic, and I don't know what you call it now. What is it? I don't know. But he's in AA and a very, very vocal participant, and has done a lot of emotional, deep work with it. He was with a very, disturbing past and had a lot of things in his life and in his personality that he had to deal with, that he hadn't dealt with for a long time. And so he really made a lot of process. So anyway, just that to tell you a little bit about it. But he had on a doctor, and I can't remember his name at the moment, I'm ashamed to say, but this is the man who actually made famous the term emotional intelligence. And within all of this, which I'm not going to get into now, there was one thing that relates specifically to this, which is when we are in an emotional state our biology, and specifically the reptilian brain and all those systems that were put in to help us survive, react to our modern day events and crises in the same way. And that is to say, as far as our body is concerned, when we're being, when someone is shouting at us, or even when someone is criticizing us, we react to that in the same way as if we're being attacked by a tiger. So in terms of our body, all we experience is being attacked or we're safe. And it's that very sort of dangerous dichotomy of this on-off switch that allows us to be triggered so heavily by things that really shouldn't cause such a reaction. So, for example, and I think, I mean, obviously, everyone has a different level of reaction and way of reacting, and we're all on a different place in our journey within this. But if we look at children, for example, children, you can rather clearly see that they are reacting what we would call disproportionately to the things that are happening to them. And that's because the biological system doesn't know that this isn't a life-threatening situation, that this isn't the end of the world. As far as they're concerned, it really is. And the same for us. If we read some mean comment or even a very ignorant comment, it can trigger an emotional response as if that person was there saying that to us. And even if that person is saying that to us, you know, they're not actually physically threatening us in any way, but we still feel that way. And we feel the need to defend ourselves. We become defensive, and the need to attack back or to run away, to avoid the situation, depending on our sort of personality. But nevertheless, it seems to be this innate human reaction, which lies in our biology and really in our neurology and the whole emotional system, which is tied into this system of survival, which was developed, you know, thousands of years ago, when a split second was could be the difference between life and death. And if you can recognize a threat quickly enough, that will increase your chance of survival. And those same mechanisms still being in place today in ourselves. And all of this ties into the first chakra, that place where we feel, you know, fight or flight, or where we feel the need to survive, the need to defend ourselves, that we have some kind of threatening situation. And that often, I mean, for me, this was sort of a realization that I came also having conversations with people where, looking back, you know, analyzing it almost from outside the situation, there's nothing that would justify my response. There was nothing that was so serious that I really needed to lash out or, you know, attack this person that I love. And yet, inside, that is exactly what I felt. I didn't say it to myself in those ways, and I didn't physically attack or physically run. I used, you know, my emotional and my words and my energy. But the reason for that was still that I was feeling defensive. I was feeling that someone was attacking me, and I wanted to attack back in order to defend myself. So that was my personal experience. Oh, let me see some things in chat. There may be a fine line between emotional cue and dealing with bull shenanigans. Perception is everything. Absolutely. I mean, I think the same could be said with IQ. If you can study for a test, then that isn't, it can't really be an accurate measurement of some innate ability. And everything is shifting. So I think emotional IQ, it's actually called EQ, right? Emotional quanta, which is like emotional intelligence. It's meant to offer another way of looking at intelligence, which was lacking with the purely IQ perspective. But yeah, I mean, definitely with everything, I think the authenticity, and you can tell when someone is talking about their own emotions and when they're really aware of themselves, I think, versus when someone is either speaking in a hyperbole or in some kind of soundbite or trying to, you know, get something across in a pithy way, when there's authentic emotional awareness, it usually has come from rather a long journey of self-reflection and really, you know, not giving yourself any excuses, as it were. Okay, if someone tried to snatch the chain off my neck, I don't care if it's worth $5, $5,000, I'd slam the city off of them. Mm-hmm. And that really is, I apologize, I'm rather dry mouth tonight, so I'm drinking quite a lot. I hope you don't hear too much. Is an emotion more quality than its quantity? Yeah, again, it's using the language of IQ, the language that was developed by this whole method of sort of, you know, judging people, and an attempt to respond to that in an equally, you know, valid way, in saying that if people have, or if people are very intelligent but lacking emotional intelligence, then that's still a problem. They're still out of balance. And he gives the example, which is very good, which when you get past school and you get to, let's say, you know, job. Offers or universities, etc., etc., then suddenly all of your scientific skills, the IQ, aren't that helpful, because everyone who's applying for it has those skills. And the people who really stand out or the people who are successful are the people who also have that emotional intelligence, which helps them communicate with people, which helps them express themselves well and be likable. And, you know, that's really a huge life skill. So anyway, we can go into emotional intelligence much more in depth, because, I mean, I have to, will someone Google very quickly, what's his name? I can't remember, but he wrote the book called Emotional Intelligence, I'm pretty sure. And there's a lot of very interesting information regarding sort of, it's just this learning and understanding and developing an emotional language that helps you understand what's going on. And he talks about it specifically in relation to teaching children. And these are these things now. What is it called? ALC? No. LAC? Something like that. But it's learning emotional studies. I can't remember this. Teaching children in primary school about recognizing their emotions, dealing with their emotions, categorizing their emotions, etc., etc. And all of these things. Yes, Daniel Goldman. Thank you very much, PZ. That's exactly the name. I think he's a doctor, I'm pretty sure. Dr. Daniel Goldman. Goldman? Oh, that's it. I think you... Is that Goldman? This reminds me of the birdcage. Coleman. But yeah, he actually said he didn't coin the phrase, because it was in some obscure research paper of a colleague of his. But he was the one who actually took this paper and then developed it into a book and actually made it famous as a concept. So anyway, if you're interested in this, I do recommend, just, I heard the episode on the Armchair Expert podcast, and it was a very good introduction to all of this. If you've never heard about it, and if you want to hear a bit more from the guy, anyway, you can go check it out. But regardless of this, it actually leads us rather nicely to the next part, which I wanted to talk about. And I admit we've gone over one chakra out of the seven. But I think that was really the main realization, or the main takeaway that I personally had. Seeing this, and it could be also the viewed through the reptilian brain, seeing how before the emotion takes over, there's this reptilian trigger to an event which makes me feel under attack. And once I sort of realized that, I'm not in any way saying that I've overcome my emotions, but once I realized that, if I can see that in the moment and see, okay, I feel like I'm being attacked. I'm not actually being attacked because this person cares about me. You know, let's talk about specifically that situation. Not when someone's really attacking me, but just when I'm interpreting that way, I can take a moment to say that isn't the case. And that's my, you know, biological system reacting in a predisposed way, and I have the ability to overcome that. And for those who are interested, who haven't heard of it, the neurology, I think, is also very interesting, whereby our emotional center in the brain is the amygdala. That's what's in charge of all of the neurochemistry that we relate to, sort of emotions. What happens in this event is, once the reptilian brain is triggered and triggers the defense mechanism, the amygdala jumps in, and that's actually the biological responses. The reptilian brain controls the heart and the breath, the lung, the speed at which we're breathing, the blood pressure, but all of the sort of sweating and adrenaline and all of the chemical reactions come from the amygdala. So that's now in that state what we call fight or flight, and it's once it takes over the body, he calls it sort of an amygdala takeover, where the amygdala has now taken over my consciousness, my body, and I'm no longer sort of in charge, me being the logical, you know, balanced, aware individual that I think myself to be. Now I've taken a back seat to this, to my amygdala. And that's why I behave in a way that isn't like me, that isn't the way I want to behave with these people, etc., etc. And recognizing that, seeing, okay, I'm in this situation. I came with these emotions. I now feel like I'm being attacked. I recognize that my amygdala has taken over. I'm breathing more heavily. My blood pressure has gone up. Like, everything is kicking in. Now is the time to take a moment and count to 5 and then count to 10. And sort of, this is my chance to take back control and to seize, you know, to try and wrestle it from the amygdala. And it's definitely possible, but it is not easy. I think succeeding is sort of the last level. Right now, I'm very much focused on trying to be aware that is happening when it's happening. And obviously, the reason for that is that if I can be aware, that gives me a fighting chance, even if I can't calm down or, you know, cancel out what the amygdala is doing, I can at least communicate it and say, I'm in an emotional state, I can't think straight, I'm too angry, I need a moment, let me calm down, you know. And that is a huge, huge step forward. So that's what I'm focusing on and trying to work on right now. We'll see. Hang on. I can see that in chat. The only problem with being emotionally intelligent is what happens if you're actually attacked. It'll be like you are in a state of suspended disbelief or catatonia. I'll be honest with you. I don't know if you've ever been attacked. I hope not. But I've never been attacked. I have been in a life and death situation. And in those moments, when you are really in a life and death situation, then you can't overtake it. Then your consciousness really does step back and you are pure instinct. Then you can see, you know, people with incredible strength, people doing things that they would never do if they were thinking. When that state actually kicks in, you can't cancel it out. You can't even become aware. You really are acting purely out of instinct. So I understand your point. But personally, this was my experience, is this, it's just so different. Like, my whole life I felt like, you know, I'm being attacked, or this is dangerous, or what if I fall? But when you're really in a situation where afterwards you realize, you know, oh wow, I really could have died, in that moment, you really, your body completely takes over. And a good thing too, as we know, you are no way, our, you know, monkey brain consciousness is in no way equipped to deal with a real life situation in real time. You know, if you think about it, our reaction time is so slow, because it first of all goes through all these other centers. And that's why the reptilian center, if you're, I'm just going to take an example again because it's what I know, but if I practiced martial arts for many years, when you're really, you know, practicing, never mind if it's a sequence or in a fight or whatever, you're reacting much more quickly than you can actually, you know, think in that monkey brain chatterway think. You are purely hand-eye coordination, reacting without any sort of filter, or you're not fast enough. You sort of have to train to become good enough. All sports, I believe, all athletes, when they're doing what they're best at, they're not thinking about it in real time because you couldn't do it that way. And that system is actually underlying everything. That system is always there. And our consciousness can sort of, you know, drop in and out occasionally when we have the leisure to be able to do it. But otherwise, this is first and foremost a survival machine. That's why I'm personally a pacifist. And I say, I wish that I could say that I would, you know, be a pacifist, but you don't know. And anyone who says, oh, in a real situation, I'd fight back, or I don't know what I'd do, I'd run away or whatever. You don't know. You don't know how you will react in that situation until you're there, because it's just, it's not you. It's your body. It's your reptilian brain, as it were. Hi, Olive. Oh, Dasiko, welcome. I can see we've got a few people. Carla Gons, welcome. Oh, Krim, nice to have you here. I didn't see you in chat before, but I saw you typing. Welcome, one and all. Great to have you here. We're in an open episode talking about emotional intelligence. Okay. So, Vin, I'm assuming Vin Wenger. Who's Win Wenger? I don't know the name, I'm afraid. I think fight, flight, freeze are all relevant. We should move in and out of them respectively. I think attacked, yes, absolutely. And reaction, yeah, everything is a spectrum, absolutely. Yes. What kind of martial arts? I've actually sort of, as everything in my life, I'm no expert. So I studied quite a lot of martial arts, different types. I mean, I studied judo and Japanese jiu-jitsu and some wrestling, karate. The most seriously, I studied kung fu, a form of kung fu called Wing Chun. And I studied that for 2.5 years, rather, you know, more dedicated than anything else. So that is definitely what I'm most attached to. And I actually studied it for the, you know, philosophical tendencies, which is my my thing. But anyway, so speaking of all that, and yes, uncontrollable, absolutely. Oh, good. I'm glad it's a good topic. I have to tell you, I feel very tired and very sad as well. It's, you know, I'm here performing for you, and there's something about talking to a live audience that certainly puts you in this headspace. As we've been saying, I'm not really thinking about what I'm saying. You know, I'm talking too fast to really be able to think of everything. But yes, this week, and not just me, really, a lot of people. So you're in good company, Krim. We're just going to have to weather the storm. Do whatever it is that gives you comfort, you know. This is the time to sort of push through, as it were, and let it go. Yes. Sorry. So that's a lot of... Yeah. I mean, most of them I studied for very little and not very things. So I can tell the difference, you know, between kickboxing and Jeet Kune Do and etc. But I'm no expert in any of them. Oh, he taught. Wow. In Abigail Honey, are you in the US? If you want to share, you don't have to. But that's cool that he taught. Yeah, it became very famous after the films. Yeah, the Ip Man films. Actually, that's where I heard about it as well. Yeah, Ip Man. For those who don't, well, I don't know why we're talking about martial arts, but you asked for it, so let's go for it. Ip Man was Bruce Lee's first teacher, and obviously Bruce Lee went out, studied a lot, and then invented his own martial art. But his martial art is also heavily influenced with a lot of Wing Chun sort of philosophies, as it were. 30 years, huh? Oh, in Canada, cool. Yeah, it's amazing. It's actually, I don't know if this is true, but it's certainly one of the few forms of martial arts that's said to have been invented by a woman. I'm sure there are more, and definitely different cultures. I haven't researched this at all, but I know that it's not very common. And sort of the outcome of this was that it's very much designed for a female body, So it's based much more on speed rather than power. And it's all about sort of close quarters, getting as close to the opponent as possible and using that for your advantage. Because usually men who are taller have stronger legs. And if you can kick a shorter opponent, you can keep them further away and be able to gain your advantage that way. So, you met one of his teachers. Which teacher? I don't know that much about Bruce Lee. Obviously, I love what I do know. But I never really liked his films when I was growing up. I don't know why. I just never really got into them. So anyway. Ah, Qigong. Yeah, of course. We did Qigong as part of our Kung Fu as well. And you did soft Qigong, I'm assuming, because there's, for those who don't know, Qigong is an energy practice, a little bit like Tai Chi. But Qigong actually has two forms, which are called soft and hard, I think. And one of them is more the movement of the energy through your body and learning that part. And then the other one is the whole, if you've seen the Buddhist monks who are like breaking concrete or shooting, throwing arrows, throwing nails through glass and all that stuff. That's supposed to be the hard Qigong, sort of channeling that inner energy to outside forces. Very interesting. And yeah. Okay. Spring Forest. Ah, is that... the type of Qigong. Okay. Oh, I don't even know. Sorry about that. I haven't even heard of that type. Jin Fun. Yeah, Jin Fun Mark. I don't know him, but I don't know much. As you say, I told you I'm not an expert. So there it is. But I do very much like the idea of martial arts. But we'll talk about that more. In a minute, and you can carry on chatting anyway. I just want to get into the last part that I was going to mention, because we are actually coming close to the end of the episode, surprisingly. I feel like it's going very quickly, but there you go. So all of this talk about our, you know, emotional intelligence and our dealing with our emotions and how do we, really all I'm interested in is becoming a happier, you know, healthier, better human being. That's really all it's about. And I don't want to do any of the emotional work. It's not fun. But, you know, I think as we grow older, it becomes more relevant. And it's just something that you you want to do to feel good. So, hey, Doctor Who fan, great to have you. Ah, that's okay. You've come for the final part, just as we're switching. And a reminder, why don't we take this time, if we're already talking about it, that the podcast is available on all your podcast apps. If you go have a look, DZP, the Discomfort Zone podcast, it really helps this podcast and to continue the production. I will be here, but I actually have a lot of plans for the future as well. So anyway, that will be in future episodes. We'll talk about that some more. But for now, I want to talk about possibly the biggest hero of my life, the person who was my first true teacher, although he died, I think, 30 years before I was born. But I'm, of course, talking about Alfred Kozhibski. And if you've never heard of Alfred Kozhibski, then don't feel bad. I think very few people who don't know me have heard of him. But just a quick introduction in case you're new. Alfred Kozhibski is really the inventor of general semantics. Semantics being more or less as simply and unphilosophically as I can put it, really the study of language, not as philology as the study of words or certain languages, and not, you know, the study of grammar, but actually the study of language itself. Oh, how do you spell it? He's Polish. So you ready for this? Kozhybski. Just like it sounds. Kozhibski. Yes. Oh, check him out. And I mean, I've recommended his book to everyone. I don't believe anyone really would ever read it, although it's worth its weight in gold, absolutely. But I really, that's exactly it. Yeah, no, I'm happy to spread his message. And so, if you've heard me talk about him before, you'll know just how important he was in my life specifically. Yeah, that's the guy. There's even some black and white footage videos of him doing some experiments and showing some of his work. And so, well, we're really coming close. So I'm going to talk about this last subject, which was I wanted to get to talking about nonviolent communication. And nonviolent communication has become very famous, I think, in the last years, and I am a big proponent of it. And I really do think that it's a lot of good work. And if you've never heard of it, then definitely go check it out. And it's all about what we said, communicating our emotions and ourselves and making sure that our sort of needs are met and that we are all in agreement as to what's happening and how we're communicating. And the thing I realized, which is something that I've realized time and time again, is that this is exactly what Kozybski was saying. The big problem is that this was about 10% or 5% of what Kozybski was saying. Kozybski said so much that really the people who became famous were the people who took little snippets of what he said and, extrapolated them for the masses into these huge fields of study, but really almost didn't add on from what Kozybski was saying. I mean, taking it their own way, but he was so encompassing in his work. It's really remarkable over 100 years later how relevant everything that he said still is. And so we'll just go over very, very quickly what the hell I'm talking about and why isn't he more famous? No, but I would really love for everyone to just read the book and then I could have much better conversations about this, because he was so revolutionary with what he said that really the first 300 pages are just describing what the problem is. And the problem with language, which is a very, very big problem to cover. It's not just, you know, the logistics or all of the things that we can think about which come from using different words, different dictionaries, trying to say something to someone meaning something else, not being able to find the right words. Beyond all of that, we really, again, he gets into the neurology and the central nervous system and how the physical aspects of our universe, the way that electricity travels, affects our general semantics, our language, our communication. And so within all of this that he talks about, and he really goes into quite a lot, what it really sort of, one of the key things that it comes down to is our use of language, and more importantly, our reaction to language. And he coined this term, which I've mentioned quite a few times, but it's so important, semantic reaction. And a semantic reaction is a reaction that we have to a word. So immediately, that covers all language, you know. Whenever someone says something to us, the word enters through our ear canal. And whether we understand the language or not, we have some kind of neurological reaction to it. Our brain processes the information. But then comes the question of what is our reaction and whether that same initial input of just sound waves can trigger a network of neurons that are seeped in emotional trauma, and that reaction can grow into an entire physical bodily reaction, as we've talked about in the beginning, that can envelop our whole being and really hijack our mind, all from can be a specific word. And if you can't think of any examples, I don't think everyone has words that would trigger such a reaction, but we certainly in today see people who the use of certain words would trigger a very, very strong emotional reaction. And even if it's not a single word, but definitely when it comes to meaningful sentences that people can say to us, we have, and you know, specific areas that are related to our personal, individual experiences, and usually childhood experiences, that leave these, you know, traumatic networks of neurons, or however you want to term it, that are then vulnerable to these specific words. And so all of this is to say, well, if I'm going to try and sum it up very quickly, Archangel Gabriel, welcome, welcome. Wonderful to have you as always. Just at the end, I was just thinking about you when we were talking about Kaczybski. Oh, and I can see, yes, if you dig semantics, he invented. He really did invent. Oh, nice. Let's see. Friend shared this Doctor and Yogi's works with me last night. Ashley Diamond. Okay, I will check that out. Sorry, that's unrelated. The thing is that when we look at it now, I mean, if you check out any nonviolent, you know, nonviolent communication video or any books or whatever, so much of it relates to how we use our language, our words, and trying to reach that agreed upon communication that allows everyone to understand what everyone is saying. But I think that it's so important as well for us to focus on our biological responses that happen in real time. Because for me, you know, again, in my experience, I don't think anymore that, you know, when it comes to people who are in your life who love you, not people you meet on the street, not people who are strangers, but the people who are close to you, it's very rare that they will choose the words that can trigger those things. Because you know each other well enough and you're friends, you have a built-in set of responses and set of sort of conversations, and you really learn each other's language over time and often even develop your own language with each person. But nevertheless, given our physiology, and especially in times like these, which I don't know about you, but I certainly feel like they seem to be happening more and more, or maybe I'm just getting older, or maybe I'm just being more aware of them. But these feelings like there's this wave of emotion that really, I mean, often that I wake up with in the morning. First thing in the morning when I open my eyes, I will have this really strong emotional reaction of whether it's anger or anxiety or depression. And that doesn't seem to me to be, you know, something that's related to something that happened. Now, obviously, this can very much be from your world of dreams, or when you're in a state and you go to sleep and you wake up with it, you know, it can be something that's just present as well. But once I start talking to people and I hear from other people as well, oh, this is the same feeling that I've had. These are the same experiences that I've had. Oh, and by the way, you know, there's a super pink moon. Then that does give it a slightly different connotation. Now, having said that, it's very important to remember that just because this thing is coming from outside or whatever it is, that doesn't mean it's not an opportunity, as was posted before, for me to up my game, for me to face my demons, for me to take this as an opportunity where, okay, this is an extreme situation, you know, this is happening to everyone, it's not my fault, or it's not, I don't deserve this in any way, but it is reality. And how do I behave? How do I react to this reality? When I get this overflowing emotion, when I get this amygdala hijack, when I get this state of fight or flight, what do I do? Do I, you know, up until now, I haven't done anything. I've gone with it. I haven't stopped to think. I haven't taken a breath. You know, I've been very much on automatic pilot and not being aware and not thinking about what I'm doing. And that is something that I don't want to ever be in, you know. Well, I don't know if ever, but only in very controlled situations. I want to be in charge because I know the kind of person that I want to be. And so I have to be able to make those decisions to be that person. So now, obviously, again, I don't want this in any way to sound like I have anything to share about success. I don't. I have a lot to share about struggle and work, a lot of hard work. But I'm now trying more and more when I wake up, and even during the day when I get this, I'm starting to recognize it more, to see, okay, right now there's this bubbling emotion that's building inside of me, and it can't be related to anything because it didn't come from anything there. I want to see it. I want to recognize it. I want to see that it's X and categorize it as something that is, you know, happening, as it were. And then I can see, and once that trigger happens, and I know it will, at least for the time being, until I've attained enlightenment, there will always be a trigger. There will always be something that I can find to latch on with that emotion, whatever emotion it is. And when that happens, if I can recognize that and say, okay, that was the bubbling emotion. I've been waiting for the trigger because I know it's coming. Here's the trigger. This is the exact moment. That gives me a huge head start to, first of all, shorten the amount of time that it takes me to relax and to bring it back to base levels. And also the ability to at least mitigate, if not eliminate, any kind of poison that I am shooting at my surroundings when those emotions grow high. So, whew, that was a mouthful. Oh, let me see. It's from all the COVID-19 gaslighting. Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I have never been an anxious person. And I do mean that until arriving in Portugal, really and truly, anxiety wasn't my thing. I was depressed for a long time. I get very angry, like rage, but I was never anxious. It just wasn't an emotion that I had, and I helped so many of my friends in dealing with that and that problem and having it. And here now, I'm just, you know, I've been developing this anxiety. Now, all cards on the table. Like, I think it's much worse when I know what the problem is and I'm just not doing what I need to do. At least if I didn't know, I could say, oh, I don't know what to do. No, I'm joking. But the thing is, I haven't been taking care of myself physically as much as I should. I've been under a lot of stress. There's a lot going on here, as you know, but with the company, with the work, with the land, and there's a million other things, and obviously raising our sons. So I do know, I recognize that I've been sort of putting all of that, having a lot of pressure, you know, taking on a lot of these responsibilities, and then not getting enough sleep, not eating enough. I do eat a bit more healthily now. I have to say I eat pretty healthily, but I just have a real problem of skipping meals and forgetting to eat. Always had that. And really not working out, not using my body. I mean, I work on the land, but for me, I know that I have to have my, even half an hour, you know, 30 minutes, 20 minutes in the morning of stretching, mobility exercises to sort of get my body moving in order for me to function at the optimum level. So that's the truth of the matter is, beyond all of this, you know, emotional work that I can talk about, there are also things that I can do to meet my basic physical needs, which are, you know, my body, my health. But despite all of that, you know, I'm doing my best. I'm trying to get better. This week was pretty rough, but today was a slightly better day, so I'm hoping to be able to keep on with that productivity. But the anxiety, I'm sure, I feel, is related also to my physical well-being and the fact that I'm sort of taking on this anxiety while letting go of more healthy habits that I may have developed. yes. Oh, okay, foreboding. Waking up blissfully unaware, then having the memory of the current reality seen back in your eyes. Probably a lot of people, yes. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'll be honest. I had, as you know, as I've spoken about before, my own sort of really dark tunnel and period that I went through when discovering about the world. And this was long before COVID. I've been sort of expecting, trying to warn those who I care about that something like this is going to happen for a very long time. And definitely, you know, the year has been tough, obviously, for everyone and for me as well. And it's been very different to what we were planning. But it is also very much related to, beyond everything else that I've said, me being a parent, you know, just the daily struggles of modern day life that we all know. That's enough to drive anyone into, you know, an anxiety or an anxious filled state. So I've been in perpetual fight flight freeze mode since last February, and I think a lot of people are feeling that way. In fact, mentioning this, so let me just finish this thought. These coming series, for those who are listening and interested, we're starting the new series with Gerald Clark, not with, about Gerald Clark. And he is our link, as far as I'm concerned, the way that I see it, a key from all of these ancient mythologies and occult information that we saw with Sitchin, and bringing all of that alongside with Drumvalo spirituality into our modern day life, into our reality that we see around us, and seeing all that, how all that affects each other, and is part of the same scenario. So I'm hoping at least that that will help us all to understand and deal with the current state a little bit better. Because even though the truth can be depressing, it's still the most important thing, in my mind at least. Information is power, etc. Okay, I can see we've got a few more comments. So it's like you're investigating your state of mind and letting your conscience lead you to realizing what the state of mind came from. Yes. I mean, your terminology is specific, so we sort of have to go over what do you mean by state of mind and what do you mean by conscience. But I think I understand what you mean. And if I do, then yes, it's, you know, what part of me looks at me, and whatever part that is, that's the part that can look at any state that I'm in. And so it's the duality. I feel enraged, I feel depressed, I feel anxious, and yet I can recognize that this happened before, these feelings passed, I'm not usually like this, the reason isn't valid. Even though I feel that way, even though I feel that it's valid, I still have this duality of saying, I know. I've been in this in this trap before. I don't want to fall into it again. I know that this isn't real, you know? Low on patience, all work, no play. Unfortunately, yes, there is some of that as well. Definitely. It's a rough time. I mean, I was just watching before I started this episode, After School, if you know, is a great YouTube channel, and it was an episode about Graham Hancock's reading of Thoth's Prophecy. Wow. Is that enough names for you? Name dropping? But in Thoth's Prophecy, which does resemble the Mayan prophecy a bit, they talk about these very, very dark times ahead that are coming, and that we feel, at least, that seem to be upon us now. So, it's definitely an interesting time. I think no one really predicted exactly this playing out as it did. Maybe they did. I don't know. But I think a lot of people were caught by surprise. And we're dealing with it. What else can we do? It's what we've always done, and it's what we will continue to do. And hopefully on a personal level, the better we improve ourselves and the better we feel about ourselves and with ourselves, I hope the better the world as well can feel on a global level. Because what is the ocean if not a multitude of drops, right? That's a Cloud Atlas quote for you. I guess unbidden emotions are made sense of via your intuition leading you to the moment you learn. Yes, I mean, I think making sense comes from your intuition and your experiences and your emotion. So sort of I have to have the emotion to make sense of it, and then I have to also be able to recognize in a more objective way what that emotion is, and then to sort of, realize, you know, what it's meaning, etc., etc. So, I mean, definitely there's There's a lot of depth, isn't there, that you can go into? Because really and truly, when I'm talking about this, you know, with people around me, it's actually some childhood trauma that I've completely forgot about or blocked out that's resting on all of this, and that, you know, that's where the answer really is underneath everything else. In my case, a lot of the times at least. I'm okay, actually. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. No, I don't think you have to hide sadness. I think we have enough hiding of sadness in our society. I think if you're sad, you should be proud of being sad. And if anyone can't deal with it, that's their problem. But I do hope you feel better. Okay, guys. Wow. This is literally the last second. I was hoping I would have a bit more of a closure. Is Avian Flute on? Check it out if Post Up is next. Stay tuned. I'm not sure if it is. But regardless, I've been Olev. Thank you ever so much for joining me for this week, another new episode. And I wish you all a better week, a happier week, and go on, carry on being you crazy, beautiful souls. Have a good one.